the expectations of this faith. Where are we coming from? UU forefather James Freeman Clark penned the words, "Onward and upward forever," back in 1885. They are words of hope and optimism. And they are part of the foundation of this faith, baked in, you could say. They imply things will get better. We can make them better, even as we get better. Because that's part of it, that we improve. Something another one of our forefathers, William Ellery Channing, dubbed salvation by character. Namely, we can improve ourselves, and we will improve ourselves, and we are part of the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. I'm oversimplifying our theological history a little bit, but these ideas were big in the mid to late 1800s. Unlike our Christian siblings who were told they were dependent on some supernatural being to save them, early Unitarians were preaching self-empowerment. Unlike their Calvinist neighbors who were given the message that it was up to a supreme power to make things better in and around them, early Unitarians were all about pulling ourselves up with the promise of an appealing upward spiral as a result. Salvation by character, onward and upward forever, the deep, optimistic, empowering roots of Unitarian Universalism, which powered this faith for generations. And I think are part of our expectations for it still and for ourselves, upward progress, powered by us. Which is a good message. The idea of waiting for a supernatural being to save you can create a sort of learned helplessness, a disinterest in doing what needs to be done. Whereas salvation by character makes it clear you need to act. And the idea that things will get better, well, isn't that the carrot at the end of the stick? It's motivating, keeps us going, helps us create the success we long for. Which may be why, although these messages were countercultural in their day, they caught on. Whether that's because of our forebears or because our forebears bolstered a wave of change that was already getting underway, I don't know. But whichever it is, these ideas took off and are now deeply embedded in our wider culture. Set high expectations for yourself or your kids, and there's no limit to what you can achieve. Keep your eyes on the prize, and you can make it. You could even say our whole economic model is based on the idea of the individual striving for improvement, with all boats lifting as the economy grows. At least, that's the idea. That's been the idea, all boats lifting with growth. You hear on the news all the time, we want growth, we expect growth, we need growth for the economy and the nation to prosper. In fact, as I discovered when listening to a TED Talk by Kate Raworth, the message actually has been one, economically, of growing upward forever. Turns out, in the 1930s, governments began to see the power of economic expansion as the solution to many kinds of problems. And in the 1960s, Kennedy ran for president on the promise of 5% growth. The job of policymakers in his cabinet then was to keep that plane flying upward and not to ask if or how it could ever be allowed to land. Onward and upward forever? It sounded good for a long time. This model created prosperity never seen before in this country and is, frankly, still the standard bearer. Even as we are coming face to face with the fact that the earth is not a limitless resource, even though we know we cannot expand indefinitely, growth is still put forward as a desirable thing. But that plane cannot keep going up. As climate activist Naomi Klein so eloquently put it, what the climate needs to avoid collapse is a contraction in humanity's use of resources. What our economic model demands to avoid collapse is continuous expansion. Only one of these sets of rules can be changed, and it's not the laws of nature, she writes. And while it would be massively unfair to place the weight of this 2020 hindsight on our Unitarian forebears, the fact is that some of our own theology, some of our own way of thinking, is a strand in one of the biggest problems to ever face humanity. A problem that requires collaboration on a scale we have never seen before. A problem that is intertwined with some of the biggest issues of our day: mass migration, a resurgence of xenophobia and racism, and the odd yet pervasive polarization we see happening across the globe. But it's up to me, and it's up to you. We need to do something, right? I don't think I'm the only one who is wondering how. We have to fix it, right? We've got to do something, and we've got to do it soon, very soon. Only we're not doing it. It's not even, I don't think, that we don't know how to do it, because we do know some things. We know a lot of things. But so many of us are not doing them. Young climate change activist Greta Thunberg, who has been leading international climate strikes, says, "We should be panicking." The IPCC report and its 11-year horizon would indicate that we should be panicking. John Oliver, late night comedian who riffs on current events, he too implies we should be panicking. I expect there are many more who say the same. But many of us are not panicking. I'm not panicking. I saw a quote from a colleague the other day. "It can be hard to wake up someone who is asleep," it said, "but it's impossible to wake up someone who is pretending to be asleep." Although, as she noted, the author of that quote was likely referring to some of our political leaders, it struck me too. Because while I've preached on climate change before, and I've preached on climate denial before, I'm still in it. I think I may even be in denial about being in denial. Because although I do believe it's happening, I notice I still project things into the future like there's no threat on the horizon. I get preoccupied with my day to day, and I get so busy doing things that I forget for long periods that climate change is even a thing. And denial is a wily foe, taking many forms. As Reverend Karen Johnson has written, we might say to ourselves, climate change is happening, but maybe it won't be so bad. We can adapt, move north, learn to live with warmer temperatures. I've had that thought. Or we'll find a technical solution, reverse the damage, capture extra carbon, seed clouds, something. I've had that thought. Or maybe you believe some of the worst case scenarios, but don't talk about it because you believe it's irresponsible to talk about it because it causes despair. I don't want to cause despair. Or maybe for you, you really feel it. Maybe you feel it too much. Maybe it keeps you up at night. It's distracting you, worrying you, weighing on you, driving you. You're trying to figure out what to do, but what can you do that would be enough? I wonder if part of the reason I'm in denial is because it just feels too big. I can't do it on my own. You can't do it on your own. Our individual efforts appear to make so little difference. I get overwhelmed, so I get busy with other things. I pretend to be asleep. But the ultimate effect of denial, whatever form it takes, is that it leaves us immobile. Either because we think there's nothing we need to do, or because we think there's nothing we can do. Either way, we're not doing anything. And for those who are acting, too often we feel alone in what we do, which makes it hard to sustain, hard to be effective, hard to find joy in that work, and hard to wake up the rest of us. However it is for you, here we are. Those same roots of onward and upward and more that caused this crisis keep most of us too distracted to see what's happening around us or too panicked to really face it. And those same roots of independence can leave us feeling, even if we are facing it, like we're alone, carrying the weight of this on our own weary shoulders, while so many others are living as though the threat isn't real. And in the meantime, the crisis continues. The other day, I was stressed out over something. I don't remember what. It wasn't directly related to the climate crisis, but I was feeling the weight of my responsibilities and of my to-do list. As I was expressing some of this to a friend of mine, as I was sharing some of that heaviness, she said, "Hold on, wait a minute, I want to offer you something. Not a physical gift, but she sang me a song that a friend of hers had taught to her. I took to it immediately, and the last time I woke up in the middle of the night fretting over this or that, I found it came back to me. And today, for all of us feeling the weight of expectations in your own life or the weight of the world pressing down, I would like to share it with you today, too."
I'll tell you the words and then I'll sing it once, and if you want, you can join in, or as always, you can just relax and take it in. So the words are, loosen, loosen, baby. You don't have to carry the weight of the world in your muscles and bones. Let go. Let go. Let go. Loosen, loosen, baby. You don't have to carry the weight of the world in your muscles and bones. Let go, let go, let go. Loosen, loosen, baby.
That same friend who sang that song to me also shared a quote with me. We must make the revolution organic, sustainable, life-giving, and irresistible. Not pressured. Now, most of us don't have a lot of experience coming up with compelling, engaging, unpressured solutions to the kind of problems that panic people or that throw them into denial. But here we are. We are in it. We are living the questions, as the poet Rilke once put it. Questions that may appear to be about solar panels and wind energy, that may appear to be about government and international politics, and they are. But they are also just as much questions about expectations of ourselves and of our faith. If our UU forebearers were alive today, I expect they would be just as countercultural now as they were back in their day. In fact, I think I may even have preached on that before. Where in their day they wanted to bolster independent spirit and encourage people to grow, in our day, I think they would want to help us connect with something larger than we are and let go a little or a lot of the incessant drive to improve. I think they would encourage us to connect with each other across the many differences that divide us and with the natural world to which we belong. And I think they would encourage us to release our hold on our culture's ever-growing push for more, to practice letting go. Because when we do, when we let go of some of those layers of expectation that we've been conditioned with, when we allow ourselves to stop being driven by the incessant noise of our world, something else can begin to move in us. Something more fundamental, a wiser way of being. How can we be saved in the face of all that confronts us? not by a supernatural force, I think, but perhaps by a natural one. Nature, after all, is in us. We are part of it. And there's a still small voice from nature that can guide us, a voice we cannot lose, but that we have to listen for, relax into, and trust. I love this snip of a poem by Philip Booth. He writes, "Daughter, believe me, when you tire on the long thrash to your island, remember what I told you. Lie gently and wide to the light year stars. Lie back, and the sea will hold you." When we stop running and stop distracting, we will know what to do. But for our Earth, where denial is a thing and panic is a thing, we may have to jumpstart ourselves by taking action, any kind of action that moves us in the right direction. It might be big things, activism, political organizing, strikes, resistance. We need people to do big things now. And it might be smaller things, carpooling, learning about the crisis. Yes, even recycling and using metal straws. Because sometimes the smallest actions have the biggest repercussions because they open a door, coaxing us out of denial and into caring. And in doing so, begin to rearrange us from the inside out. In honor of climate strike next week, I created for us a list of spiritual exercises with some small things and some bigger things that you could choose to do. They are spiritual exercises. They are as much about the spiritual practice as they are about the actual doing of any particular thing. They are jump starters for a new relationship with our planet and our world, and actions that can, bit by bit, change us and the circumstances around us. Then I invite you to come and share at our Connection pop-up groups that are going to be happening in 2 weeks. Connection groups that you heard about a few moments ago from Amy are one place to make room for that still, small wisdom voice to speak. And one place to be reminded, no matter what it feels like much of the time, that you are not alone. There is so much to do, so much to heal in us and the world, so much to acquire proof that we have and are enough. But you and I are part of the plan for this world's salvation. Of that, I have no doubt. Rest, if you must, like a swimmer lying on her back who floats, and allow yourself to feel in your bones the aching, healing sense that this is enough. You are enough. We are enough. Enough.